You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 230 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Sensational Wonder Woman number 9, Infinite Frontier number 0, Batman number 106, Crime Syndicate number 1, The Swamp Thing number 1, Batwoman season 2 episode 6, Do Not Resuscitate, Black Lightning season 4 episode 4, The Book of Reconstruction chapter 4, A Light in the Darkness, Superman and Lois season 1 episode 2, Heritage, and Flash season 7 episode 1, All's Wells That Ends Wells. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, 8-issue miniseries is launching on the 22nd of June and will be written by Tom King and drawn by Bilquez Evely.
I'm curious what this is going to be like. I suspect it might be pretty controversial, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious what it's going to be about, too. Is it going to be, number one, is it going to be Black Label? Or is it going to be, in regular continuity? I'm just curious. I haven't seen anything about it yet, so. All right, up next for DC News. Wonder Woman celebrates her 80th anniversary with a 100-page spectacular on sale in October. I was very surprised to get this news so early in the year.
Yeah, that does seem rather early.
But it's not unusual that they're celebrating an 80th anniversary with a 100-page spectacular. That seems to be the norm lately.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, and for our last bit of DC news, the CW has announced that Supergirl will premiere March 30th at 9 p.m. in the time slot that is now Superman and Lois, which apparently is going on a brief hiatus due to COVID-related production. And Superman and Lois will take a break after its fifth episode and will return on May 18th at 9 p.m. So it's going on quite a bit of a hiatus, almost two months.
That seems risky to me. For a fresh show, you're trying to establish an audience. I mean, it's not that I'm concerned that, you know, CW will, you know, lose faith in the show. It exists on the CW. That's enough for it to keep going. But that's an odd move. I understand that they had a delay in production, so I get it from that perspective. But that's a big gap, especially like I said, for a freshman show.
Now I'm surprised. Let's see. They're releasing 5 episodes. We're going on the hiatus. If they knew about this COVID-related production, why didn't they just wait and launch it all together?
That's a good question.
I think it would have made a lot more sense. So
yeah, I mean, but to be fair, the delay happened after they had already filmed a number of episodes, and so everything was on schedule at one point, right? To just be aired as it is.
That's true.
So I think that delay would have happened pretty late. And I understand not wanting to push the show back because they want, you know, they've been talking about this show for a while. They want viewers to be able to see it. clearly they believe in it. They've already renewed it for another season, so I can understand why they debuted it, and I understand why they're, you know, putting another show in the meantime. It just seems like a really long gap for, like, if it was Legends, I wouldn't even think twice. Or honestly, Supergirl, I wouldn't think twice, because those shows have a history of going away for a while and then coming back. So I'm just a little bit surprised they're doing it with their new one.
And with 2 months of Supergirl, obviously that show is going to be going on hiatus and coming back at a later time too, because I can't see them doing a full season in those 2 months.
Yeah, I would assume so. Honestly, I was a little bit surprised that Supergirl was even debuting as early as it is, just because I kind of figured they were going to use it as a sort of, you know, late spring, early summer show.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see how that goes. I'm wondering if they're shortening Supergirl's season because it's ending. That might not be the case, so I don't know. I really haven't seen what their episode total is.
Well, I think Black Lightning tends to be pretty short, so if any of the shows were to end early, I would put my money on that one.
Yeah, I think Black Lightning will probably have about the same number of episodes they usually do. Because to shorten that doesn't seem like they get the story done in time. That's just my opinion. All right, well, that wraps up DC Talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Howdy! Listen up, I am talking! Now, the question of the hour is, who's got a Doctor Who podcast? Answer, we do. Next question, who's listening to it? Answer, you are. If you're sitting up there in your silly little spaceship and you've got any plans to listen to a Doctor Who podcast, just remember who's standing in your way. And then, do the smart thing. Listen to Earth Station Who right here on the ESO Network.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. For you.
All right, let's talk. Sensational Wonder Woman number 9. The issue opens up at the St. Charles Care Home for the Elderly. A 98-year-old woman named Katie has gone missing. The first thing we see from her bedroom is that she's a big Wonder Woman fan. Now, Katie is out for a walk when she comes across a boy whose soccer ball is stuck in a tree. Katie throws her Wonder Woman tiara and knocks it loose. And the boy asks Katie about the tiara, and Katie tells the boy a story about how she was a journalist during World War II and Wonder Woman saved them. She finds Wonder Woman's tiara after she had thrown it. Now, before Katie can finish her story, two nurses come and take her back to the hospital. One of the nurses, Alonzo, learns that Katie will not be able to stay at the home anymore and has 30 days to vacate. I gotta tell you, Cletus, I really enjoyed this story. And I think it's my favorite of the Sensational Wonder Woman stories so far, because I just really liked it.
I very much enjoyed the flashback. The way they changed the art style was pretty cool. The only thing that didn't quite land with me, I wasn't a huge fan of, it was hard to interpret, but the way I interpreted, way that the comic I thought was telling me, was that she didn't actually have dementia. They just all thought she did because nobody believed that she was friends with Wonder Woman. And that didn't quite land with me. I was like, come on. Okay, like, fine, if she doesn't have dementia, she doesn't have dementia, but, like, it just seemed, that seemed a little flimsy. All the interactions that she had with the guy at the end, who seems to be on her side in terms of, like, ultimately wanting what's best for her, doesn't seem to even understand. She's like, saying, you know, I actually knew Wonder Woman. I don't think I'm Wonder Woman. And he just sort of ignores it, but then turns around and does actually care about what's good for her. It was like, that felt confused to me. It felt like the comic was trying to do two different things at once.
I understand where you're coming from with that, because we honestly didn't see Katie showing any signs of dementia. So I see where you're coming
from. Any signs. She was sharp as a whip the whole time. And again, maybe it's just we're just seeing a good day. You know what I mean? And maybe next issue we see that there are, like, she does indeed have dementia. Or if it continues the way it did this one and she doesn't, like, it seems like a flimsy basis for – it also just seems like a touchy subject to have a patient be in an elderly care home. And everybody, not a single medical professional is able to figure out that she doesn't actually have this. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, it's not that, it doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal, but it kind of felt rather central to the story. And it didn't really feel like the comic could make up its mind what it wanted to do with her.
Yeah. And maybe we'll find out more in the second half of the story. But from what we saw in the first part, I have to agree with you. I didn't see any signs of dementia with her. So, and her being able to knock out that soccer ball with the first throw of the tiara was pretty cool.
Yes.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Infinite Frontier Number 0. The issue opens up with a brand new multiverse, where there once stood 52 universes, walled off from the greater omniverse, there are now countless universes, and the quintessence can detect no boundaries. Now we see that Wonder Woman is offered membership into the quintessence. Before Wonder Woman restarted the multiverse, she was warned of a great cost, a lurking threat that she needed to protect the multiverse from. And she needs to make sure her family and friends are safe before she can accept membership into the quintessence. The Spectre is tasked with providing the assurances Wonder Woman needs. So the Spectre guides Wonder Woman around the new multiverse. First we visit Shazam. Man, I can barely even say it. Otherwise known as Black Adam. Superman and Flash discover he has been heroic and saving lives. I gotta tell you, Cletus, that name is the stupidest name I've heard.
I'm sure that it's possible to come up with a dumber name than that, but I can't think of one. That is unbelievably stupid on so many levels. Just, oh my gosh, unfathomable that a group of people all decided that that was a good idea. How does not one person in the room go like, guys, that's really stupid? At best, people are going to mock it. That's best case scenario.
Us. I got to tell you, Cletus, when I was reading this issue, I'm reading through things, and I keep hearing you ranting in the background reading this.
It's unbelievable to me that more than one person thought this was a good idea. I could see maybe one person somehow convincing themselves that Shazam isn't the stupidest thing they've ever heard and being like, oh, okay, it kind of works. It's a mix of Black Adam and Shazam. Huh, kind of clever. How was there not literally any other person, anyone that was like, yeah, that's actually really stupid. Don't do that.
I'm kind of curious how long they're going to try to keep it around. I can't see it staying around for too long.
It's already been around too long. The fact that it made it into a published page and not just like as a joke in their like email chain is unbelievable. Are we positive this isn't just like an elaborate April Fool's prank?
I don't know. They seem pretty serious about it. Crazy. All right. Next, Diana goes to Arkham Asylum, where we learn that there has been a Joker attack and Bane is dead. Now, we saw this foretold a while back, if I remember right. But, I don't know. I didn't really care to see it.
Yeah, it didn't. It, I didn't. Stuff like that is really frustrating to me. And this is where I know with the, especially when you're doing this Infinite Frontier stuff, killing a main character like Bane is a big deal, except it wasn't played as a big deal. And then you know he's just going to come back in like some really stupid way. And I don't know, it just, doing that song and dance just always feels a little silly to me.
I agree with you. There was no reason for it. Honestly.
No, it was really just done for, it was done for shock factor, but then it barely even like paid attention to it. And we'll get into it when we read the Batman comic, but Batman comic doesn't even reference it.
No, it doesn't. Not at all.
Like it's like a cheap thrill. It's not even like a big shock moment. It's just a cheap thrill. Like, Bane's dead. Whatever. Move on.
All right. We see that Barbara Gordon is once again Oracle. Cassandra Cain and Stephanie Brown are both Batgirls, and Huntress is also there with Barbara. We see that Dinah mentioned something about birds, but they don't come out and say birds of prey, and I wasn't really sure why. Next, we see Timothy Fox, who wants to be called Jace, playing chess with Lucius. Lucius is talking about being the richest family in Gotham when Grifter comes in and tells them to get in the panic room. There has been a code green at Arkham. It's the Joker attack. On Themyscira, we see that Hippolyta decides to replace Diana and enter the world of men. And she also plans to learn more about Yara Flor. And we find out that Nubia is the new queen of the Amazons. A lot of status quo change there with the Wonder Woman characters.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and obviously that's what the whole point of this comic was to set up a bunch of different new status quos across the DC universe. And I don't know about you, Drew. It felt paradoxical to me, because the whole point of Infinite Frontier essentially is that you have an unlimited stories. You know, you can tell whatever story you want, right? Or you can reference any past story you want, because it all happened now. It all mattered. Any future story is going to count and matter, and you can do it in any timeline and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But then turning around and setting hard, rigid, but this is now this, this is now this, this is now this, basically just telling every writer, this is what you have to write, this is what you have to write, this is what you have to write. Did any of them get to choose this? I don't know. Like, that's the thing. I don't know. Maybe they did, and they incorporated it into the comic, but it kind of feels a little bit like one or two people got to decide what everybody else was doing and then labeled it Infinite Possibilities, as long as your name is Josh Williamson or Scott Snyder.
We also see the Justice Society of America. Alan Scott comes out of the closet to his kids, Jade and Obsidian. Titan's Tower is now a school, and it kind of felt like Xavier School for the Gifted Children to me. Metropolis, we see that Jonathan Kent is apparently is Superman now, and we see him help an alien creature get back to his own dimension. We see Green Arrow and Black Canary are still an item, and apparently have lost their memories, according to Mr. Terrific. Ollie states that he's more rich than Bruce Wayne, and Ollie hints that they are joining the Justice League, which we know they are, so. We see that Roy Harper is back from the dead. I was happy to see the Star Girl, because it looks like they're pretty much look like the show to me. Star Girl is in Blue Valley, Nebraska, with her stepdad Pat, and she's a member of the Justice Society. That kind of looked like it was going to be a fun comic. We saw the Magistrate is coming to Gotham, along with a weird-ass-looking version of Scarecrow. We also saw Jon Stewart and Simon Baz are bringing Teen Lantern to Oa. Barry Allen is joining the Justice Incarnate at the Totality, and Wally West has taken the mantle of the Flash on Earth. Towards the end of the comic, we find out that Wonder Woman turns down membership in the Quintessence, and she plans to explore the Infinite Frontier. And then in the epilogue, we learn that the Quintessence has imprisoned Darkseid on that Earth Omega. And apparently this is going to be continued in Infinite Frontier number 1 coming in July. I know we talked recently about Simon Baz being gone, but it looks like they're bringing him back in.
I was really surprised when he popped up, Drew. I was like, oh, they remembered he exists.
I'm kind of curious what they're going to do with the Green Lanterns, because it kind of feels like they're going to tell that we're the Green Lanterns, but we don't have our ring power right now storyline. Does it feel like that's what they were setting up to you?
Yeah, which is concerning. I'm a little bit frustrated with that, Drew, because it's not future state if you're basically just telling these stories out of order. You know what I mean? So I thought the point of future state was jumping ahead into seeing a possible future. And instead, it feels like a lot of these were essentially just like, hey, this is the story that we're going to tell in 3 months, but we're going to tell the middle chapter of it inexplicably first, rewind back to the beginning, and then hit the point that we've already told you. Keep in mind, almost all of these stories were bad. So they've almost guaranteed, they're like, hey, FYI, in case you're not sure, we're going to give you a bunch of crap for the next 5 or 6 months.
I sure hope not, but that's the feeling I got too. I sure hope that's not what they're doing. And like they pointed out that the future state stuff was a possibility that could happen. It might not happen, but it ain't looking too good. After reading this issue,
it feels like they're going to get kind of cute with that, where it's like it could happen, and then they inevitably do that story, but maybe the good thing happens this time instead of the bad thing, right? And so it's like, well, that's not really this is just semantics at this point. You essentially just told the story out of order.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case, but I guess we'll see.
I'm curious what you think about this Infinite Frontier. Drew, to me, it feels extremely reminiscent of the New 52, except it's not resetting continuity. That feels like the only difference. It feels very rigid in terms of we are going to dictate all of these storylines need to match up and line up, and we're doing all of these. And that's what the DC stories have to be for at least the next 1 to 2 years. And it just feels like one of the downfalls of the New 52 is it worked briefly right at the beginning when all of the writers were in unison and there was a cohesive story. But then like within a couple months, everything starts to fall apart because writers want to do their own thing, obviously. And it's impossible to keep, 30, 40 comics all on the same page. I feel like we're doing the exact same thing that didn't work less than a decade ago.
To me, this feels like a total reboot. Even though they're saying it's not a reboot, it feels like a reboot to me. Yeah.
It's absolutely a reboot. If they're just the only thing, it's a reboot without resetting the timeline. That's the only thing. And it feels like they're kind of just bending the rules a little bit, being like, we didn't technically reboot anything. I mean, everything's totally wildly different, and nothing is the same as it was before, but we didn't reset the timeline. Doesn't count.
It really feels like they're trying to get away from the DC Trinity, too. Jonathan Kent's going to be Superman, Wonder Woman's not Wonder Woman, and I don't know if Bruce is going to stay Batman. It feels like they're trying to move.
They've done that a number of times, and it's never stuck. Those three characters are their most three popular characters for a reason. It's always going to come back to them.
Yeah, and I see them coming back sooner than later. They're going to try.
One thing I did wonder, Drew, I question whether Jonathan as Superman was set in the present. That one felt like it was maybe set in the future. There was nothing that really clarified it one way or the other.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I wasn't sure about that myself. And we'll find out for sure next week because we got a Superman title coming out. But I'll be curious to see how they set that up because it sure felt like to me that they wanted to have Jonathan as Superman. All right. Anything else we want to talk about before we move on?
I don't think so.
All right. Let's move on then. All right, let's talk Batman number 106. The issue opens up with Batman captured and going through Scarecrow's brainwashing. In a flashback scene, Batman is chasing down the Insanity Collective. Batman is working with Oracle to stop its leader, Master Wise, and Ghostmaker shows up to help. We see Harley makes a quick cameo. Saint Industries talks to Mayo Nakano about its magistrate program. And we see reporters come to Bruce Wayne's new place, and the neighbors don't like it. Batman and Ghostmaker are hanging out in the makeshift Batcave like they're old friends. And it looks like Mayor Nakano has the Scarecrow suit in his bedroom. Now, that was one thing I was curious about. Is Mayor Nakano Scarecrow? What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think so. I was under the impression that the Scarecrow had gotten into his house.
Oh, that might probably makes more sense than the Scarecrow costume just hanging in his bedroom, which is what I thought was going on.
I could be wrong. But that was my interpretation, was that Scarecrow had infiltrated his house.
That makes a lot more sense, because I can't see Mayor Nakano being the Scarecrow. That's why I found that a little confusing. That makes a whole lot more sense. We're seeing the beginnings of the magistrate program, and of course, I know it's going to get implemented. But is it going to go like it did in Future State? I don't know. But one thing that feels really odd to me is Batman and Ghostmaker hanging out. Apparently, they're trying to make Ghostmaker his new partner. But I'd much rather see a Robin in there than Ghostmaker. But that's just my opinion.
I mean, I agree. What do you think of the new Scarecrow look?
Hate it.
I just think it's trying too hard. It's just too over the top to me. I know that we're reading a comic where a dude dresses up in a bat suit, but be that as it may, it feels like it's just trying too hard to be like, oh, look how super duper scary he is. I'm just like, okay, it's the Scarecrow.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was that scary. I just didn't like it. And maybe I'm just old school and like the more traditional costume for him. All right, we also had a second story in this about Damian. And we see that Damian has returned to his mother. He tells her that he has come back to take his role as grandson of the immortal Ra's al Ghul, heir to the demon throne. And he tells Talia that he's rejected Batman. Now, when Talia is attacked by the League of Lazarus, does Damian embrace his assassin side, and will he kill? Guess that's to be continued in Detective Comics 1034. I'm kind of curious where they're going with this, because if Damian's going to be getting his own Robin title, I can't see him taking back up the mantle as the grandson of the immortal Ra's al Ghul. This seems very temporary to me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. If it tells a good story, that's fine. But I do worry that it's gonna just kind of be a waste of time. Because, like you said, we both know he's not gonna be this long term.
No, he's not. So, yeah, I agree with you. I don't know where they're going with the story. Maybe it has some importance. Maybe it won't. We'll just have to wait and see. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week. Crime Syndicate Number 1. The issue opens up with a flashback of the assassination of JFK by young Clark Kent. We see in the present the Daily Planet prints a story about Ultraman losing his grip. Ultraman gets angry and rams one of the Daily Planet's semis into the building. Ultraman tells Cat Grant if she runs any more fake news about him, he'll kill her whole editorial staff, including the janitors. We see President Oliver Queen is meeting with Ambassador Donna Troy from Themyscira. Oliver is tied up in the lasso of truth and hanging upside down. And when the FBI agents storm in, I couldn't tell if this was a hostage situation or foreplay to some kinky bondage sex.
Pretty sure it was the second one. Almost positive.
That's what I thought. But I thought I'd get your opinion on that. In Coast City, we meet John Stewart, who convicts a kid and a cop by the power vested in him by the overlords of Oa. And we see he drops them to their death just as Earth is attacked. Starro attacks, and we see that he takes over Ultraman. We get to meet Owlman, and he has a group of Talons working for him. We see Alfred kills some guy who snaps a picture of Owlman on his phone, and Owlman wonders why the aliens have not attacked Gotham. We also get the origin of Ultraman, whose mom, Pa Kent, made him do all the chores until they revealed his secret origin from Krypton, and then he leaves. I don't know about you, Cletus, but I like this issue. I found the stories intriguing and what's going on with the characters. Owlman, I really liked Owlman.
Drew, I am shocked that in a comic about, honestly, not even anti-heroes, just straight up villains, that you're the one that enjoyed the comic more.
Yeah, I did. That's
the opposite of how it usually goes.
I enjoyed this. I was surprised. I was actually honestly surprised.
I don't know that it was fair to the comic. I felt myself disappointed by the comic. Not because the comic was bad. It's not bad. I feel like I had too high of expectations for what it was going to be. And it, I think in my head I was hoping it was going to be some kind of really interesting new take on the, especially because it was a mini series on the Crime Syndicate, just some sort of like weird, cool, modern take on the Crime Syndicate. And it just kind of feels like an old school comic, which is fine. Again, that's fine. And that is entirely just my expectations not being met, which isn't fair to the comic. But nonetheless, because of that, I felt disappointed when I read it, because it was all just sort of, you know, your run of the mill old school action comic, which was again, that's fine. There's no reason it can't be that, but it was not what I was hoping for. I was hoping for a more like prestige style comic. I also didn't totally understand if the comic knew what it wanted to be about. Obviously it's about the Crime Syndicate, but it didn't seem like it could make up its mind fully what the story was, because it introduces all the characters. And I think in theory, it's going to center around the Starro invasion. That's what it seems like, but it didn't feel entirely clear to me because it bounced around so much.
The feeling I got when I read it was, oh, they're doing the old Starro story, but with the bad Justice League instead of the good Justice League. That's what I took away from it. They were trying to mimic that. Go ahead. I was just going to say, they're trying to mimic that comic and kind of like a mirror universe to it. We're going to see that story, but we're going to see it from the Crime Syndicate's perspective this time. So it's kind of like a alternate mirror universe kind of thing going on.
I mean, I agree. That's what my impression was as well. That's not as clever as I think the comic thinks it is. It's especially not a clever enough idea for a 6-issue miniseries, in my opinion. We've seen that story. We've seen the "What if the Justice League was bad" story, literally with the Crime Syndicate, multiple times. So the crux of the story being like, well, what if the Justice League was bad? Yeah, that's what the Crime Syndicate is. I'm aware. I think most people interested in reading this comic are aware of that. So it's just, again, I didn't think the writing was bad. I don't think the story is bad. I feel like the comic could have done way more and way more interesting things than what they've chosen to do. It just feels like they went for the easiest possible story that they could tell.
So, and I haven't read as much Crime Syndicate stuff as you have, so maybe that's why I was more into it too.
But like, Drew, you know where the story, you've, like, even if you haven't read that, you know where, if it's just ultimately, like I said, I'm hoping for some interesting twist. Because if it's just the first Justice League fight against Starro, but they're bad, like, you know that story. you might not have actually read that, but like, you know what I mean? Like you know it.
That is true.
You know the good version of that story. It's not, there's nothing that clever or interesting that you can do if the only different thing is they're evil. Like, okay, they're still going to ultimately probably beat Starro, right? Or worst case, they don't, and he just becomes a member of the evil team. Like, that's, again, none of that is all that clever.
No, it's not. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Swamp Thing number one. The issue opens up with a murder investigation in the desert. One of the deputies tells the doc about a legend of a man from the desert. Mr. Levi Campy is traveling on a plane from New Delhi International to JFK, New York, and he has a dream that he turns into Swamp Thing and destroys the plane. Levi lands and meets up with his friend Jennifer Reese, and she's very happy to see him. And while they're loading up stuff in Jennifer's car, two dudes in suits are surveying them and taking pictures. Now, the murder investigation in the Sonarian Desert continues. The chief and his deputy hear a scream, and the chief follows a trail of blood. The 150-year-old legend comes out from behind a rock and almost looks like a zombie. We see that Levi spends the night at Jennifer's apartment in Brooklyn, New York, and we're told their relationship floats between friendship and something more intimate. We learn that Prescott Industries sent Levi to India to negotiate a land deal for them, and Levi also went back to rebuild a relationship with his dad. We learn that didn't go well, and we also learn that Levi has a brother named Jacob. Somewhere in the woods, Levi's brother Jacob makes a dark bargain, and the last thing Levi's father says is that he forgives him, and then he passes away. Right before the creature in the desert kills the sheriff, the Swamp Thing appears in the desert, and the creature destroys him somehow, and then he ends back up in Central Park. We see Levi's body coming out of a tree trunk. Reading back over that recap, it didn't feel like I did a good job conveying the recap of this comic, because I thought it read a lot better than what my recap is.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought this was really good. I'm very excited for this series.
I am too. And what I liked about it is it's like totally new Swamp Thing. It's not treading over stuff I've read before.
And what I like too, Drew, is not only is it a new Swamp Thing, but it's doing Swamp Thing in a different way, right? Like, it's one thing to do a new Swamp Thing, but the dude dies and falls into a swamp and then becomes Swamp Thing. Like, that's not really a new Swamp Thing, right?
Right.
I like this is way different, at least than now. I mean, I'm assuming at some point he's going to become trapped in his Swamp Thing body, and that's fine. But the path leading up to that is wildly different, and that makes it that much more intriguing and interesting. Oh, man, I really liked this issue.
And I wouldn't mind seeing him switching back and forth either, uncontrollably, because it'd make for a more interesting story, I think. If he keeps switching back and forth, and we see him doing his human stuff, and them having to do a Swamp Thing kind of stuff, I think that'd be interesting also.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I agree. See, this is what I'm talking about, Drew. Like, this is what I was hoping for from the Crime Syndicate comic, where it did something new or interesting with the Crime Syndicate, and instead it's just doing the Crime Syndicate again. That's sort of the difference to me between the two comics. Again, I don't think that the Crime Syndicate comic is bad. It's not a bad comic. But my hope, my expectation for it were what we got here from the Swamp Thing comic.
Yeah. You just wanted something new.
Yeah, well, I mean, because we've seen the story that it's telling. I mean, again, maybe not that exact literal story, but it's not doing something new or really radically different for the Crime Syndicate. The only thing, and again, where I think that story is thinking it's more clever than it is, the only thing that's different is some of the characters. Like, it's Jon Stewart instead of whoever it normally is for powering, or it's Donna Troy instead of, I think, Lois is usually who Superwoman is. that's, again, that's not that big of a change. That's not enough to be, oh, that's different, because it's literally just Superwoman, but Donna Troy. Whereas, again, with this Swamp Thing one, it's Swamp Thing, but it's radically different. The guy, like, falls asleep, and he becomes Swamp Thing out in the desert, and then he wakes up, and he falls out of a tree. Like, oh, that's way different.
Yeah, and it's really interesting. So I see where you're coming from. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
I'm lifelong ensign Charles Kelso.
I'm Federation envoy Keith Johnson.
I'm Ferengi counselor Veronica Dashel.
And I'm Andorian mess hall cook R. Allen Seiler.
And we're the crew of Earth Station Trek. Join us for
episode reviews,
discussions of themes and characters,
and all the news from across the Trekverse.
Our logs cover the full gamut of Star Trek.
From the groundbreaking original series
to the future of the franchise on Paramount Plus,
with lots of stops in between.
Join our crew aboard Earth Station Trek for your regular podcast escape into the Trekverse.
Go bald or go home!
And we're back. Let's talk Batwoman, Season 2, Episode 6, Do Not Resuscitate. When the episode opens up, a Hamilton doctor is trying desperately to replicate the cure that was used to stop the bat poisonings. We see Batwoman struggles to take down some thugs in the alley as her kryptonite poisoning gets worse. Jacob and Mary are driving in a car when a semi rams into the side of their car. Both are taken captive by Amygdala. Both were taken captive by Amygdala and are being held in Mary's clinic. Amygdala wants the cure. Sophie asks Ryan to bug her girlfriend's phone so they can track down her supplier of snake bite, which is Ocean. Sophie tracks down Ocean and Alice, who are in the middle of a fight foreplay, and Sophie takes the map from Ocean. When Sophie calls Luke about the map, she finds out about Jacob and Mary's kidnapping, and Sophie shows up to save them, but Amygdala takes her out. Batwoman shows up as Amygdala is about to kill Mary, and with a jolt of adrenaline, Batwoman defeats Amygdala. The Hamilton doctors show up with a gun pointed at Sophie's head and take the map from Batwoman. Jacob shuts down Mary's underground clinic, and we see at the end of the episode that Alice kills a fake Ocean, and she calls Sophia to send somebody out to get her and the body.
What an episode. My favorite show. I just don't understand the plot line with the kryptonite bullet. I was telling my girlfriend had missed a few episodes of this and also just not care for the show. And because she doesn't do a podcast, she doesn't have to watch it.
So blame it on me, huh?
No. She really like fully pays attention to the show anyway. But so anyway, so she had missed a few. So she was confused on some of the stuff that was going on. And I was like, well, she's got a bullet wound, but it will conveniently never glow when some other person is looking at it. And sure enough, until she finally reveals the full extent of the wound, anytime anybody else sees it, it just looks like a nasty bullet wound. That's just so that whole plot line is just so frustrating. And then they made it Luke's fault. Drew, that was incredible. That was just the mental gymnastics required to make the fact that she's about to die from a kryptonite bullet wound, making that his fault is just, that's a masterclass in mental gymnastics. She could have told somebody at any point, and she's like, well, I couldn't do it because you didn't believe in me, Luke. Essentially being like, if you weren't you, I would still be fine and alive because I would have somehow just decided that it would be okay to tell somebody about this. This show, Drew, drives me up a wall.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's funny how Ryan can do no wrong.
Literally, this is absolute, like, okay, yes, well, directly it's Hush's fault because he's the one that shot her. But beyond that, The fact that it got to this point is 100% her fault. She's done nothing to let people know of the extent. Like, hey, by the way, it glows green. It's not just that this is a kryptonite wound. There's still kryptonite in there. No. It's Luke's fault. It couldn't possibly be the new character that we've introduced because she has to be perfect. That's what really makes her relatable, Drew, is the fact that she has no flaws and it's never her fault. I relate deeply to that.
I know. It does feel an awful lot like that in this show, doesn't it? All right. I don't really have anything else to say about this episode, do you?
No, I do not.
All right, let's move on. Black Lightning, Season 4, Episode 4, The Book of Reconstruction, Chapter 4, A Light in the Darkness. Gambi and TC are working on a flaw to delay the Freeland PD from getting their DEG guns. We see that Jefferson is pissed that it's been 3 days and Lynn still hasn't told him about her dinner with Tobias. We see that Jefferson goes to see Tobias at the restaurant, and Jefferson tells Tobias to stay away from his family. And Tobias reminds Jefferson plans to take away everything he loves. Now we see that Tobias meets with the mayor and other officials of the city. He's giving $85 million to fix up the city. In exchange, the mayor is promising the Freeland PD will clean up the gangs and the metas from the street. We see Lala has gotten his hands on some first-generation DEGs. We find out that Lala's contact has gambling debt to Lala, and he's agreed to give Lala the location and time of the delivery of the second-generation DEG guns. Jefferson continues to fight in Lala's underground fight club. Jennifer and TC uncover a secret. Anissa gets Grace Volume 2, Issue 16 of The Outsiders. I gotta tell you, I thought that was cool. Jefferson goes to a bar, hears a story about how much good Black Lightning has done, and he goes home and apologizes to Lynn. Then Jefferson tells Lynn she should go work for Tobias so they can keep tabs on him. Maybe they can get the upper hand for once. We see Lala attacks during the mayor's speech, and when the mayor gets shot, the chief of police blames Lightning. And the police chief believes she could have saved the mayor. We learn that Tobias planned Mayor Billy's death, and police-issued ammunition was used to make it look like it was friendly fire. Gambi learns about the energy field emitter that his girlfriend is working on. And then at the end of the episode, we see Jefferson apologizes to Jennifer. She doesn't respond, but instead goes into the ionosphere. She overloads with energy and then can't move. And then eventually we see her explode into energy.
I'm not a fan of the storyline they're doing with the police chief, because it's just like, it's the most stupid CW character plot that the show, like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels too much like a lot of the other dumb stuff that the other CW shows do, and not like what you usually see on the show. Like, her blaming the vigilantes for the mayor's death is just, where's the logic there? It'd be one thing, like, I feel like they needed to have done something where that made sense. But her argument literally makes no sense. There's no logical way you can argue that had they not shown up, the mayor would still be alive. What? How do you argue that?
Well, Lightning, if you remember right, Lightning came up onto the platform. She threw the police chief so she couldn't get to the mayor. Or she was kind of throwing people down. And the police chief blames her because she would have gone and, you know, jumped in front of the mayor or whatever. But she couldn't because Lightning threw her, put her down or knocked her down or something like that. That's what she was not happy for. And that's why she blamed Lightning for his death, because she thinks she could have saved him.
Okay. It makes a little more sense. I still am not a fan of it. I also thought the scene with her and the new replacement for the old police guy, I thought that was really awkwardly delivered by the actress. I've just not been a fan of what they're doing with that character.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm not a big fan of her myself. I was not expecting Jefferson to keep fighting in Lala's underground fight club. I was surprised he was still doing that. I thought he'd done last episode, so that kind of surprised me.
It kind of made sense, though, because I think he maybe would have, but then he walks into Lynn eating dinner with Tobias, right?
Right. So
that it wasn't, like, we almost saw him resolve his issues, and then it wasn't. I don't know. That's kind of what it felt like. It kind of made sense in that regard, where he had almost worked through it, and he was getting ready to make amends with her, and then he walks in and sees that, and he's like, you know what? I need to beat some more people up.
I can see that. I'm glad they didn't drag out that drama forever. It was short-lived, which was good.
Well, but I feel like that's pretty typical for this show. I think it's reflective of the generally better writing. And also the show's just not as long as the other ones, so it doesn't have the time to linger.
Which is good. Yeah. Anissa getting Grace that issue of The Outsiders, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was cool. I was glad that they amended that quickly, because her initial reaction with my place already has like a vibe going, I was like, that's the dumbest thing you could say to a significant other. What are you doing?
Yes, exactly.
And I know that that was the point, but it was like so on the nose stupid where it was like, come on. So I was glad that they resolved that quickly, because that was, it was a little too on the nose.
Yeah. So I'm with you there. I'm glad they resolved that quickly. And we saw the fallout from Jennifer keep going up to the ionosphere. They freaking blew her up. I'm kind of curious if she's going to come back as the energy thing we saw Black Lightning as in the Future State comic.
I'm kind of curious if we're going to see something like that. I'm fairly certain that she's going to come back. However, we do know that the actress wanted to be out. And so there's like a little tiny part of me that's like, they could have just killed her.
I was wondering that too, because I knew she wanted out. But I was like, is that really how they're going to take her out? They really haven't done much with her story this season besides her going up to the ionosphere all the time, and then her online account she just created. If they get rid of her right there, that feels like they're not going to finish up that part of the story. I felt like there was going to be something major that happened with that. And I could be wrong. This could be it for her, which could really drive Jefferson and the rest of the family to try to take out Tobias or whatever, you know, kind of drive them forward on getting things accomplished, and even driving Jefferson more reckless than he has been. That'd be a big loss for the family they don't need right now.
Yeah, tell me about it.
One of the other things I really liked about this episode is it's continuing the Jefferson-Tobias. It's continuing the Jefferson-Tobias rivalry that they've been doing a good job of building this season. Because Tobias keeps promising that he's going to tear Jefferson apart. I'm waiting for him to make his next move. And I feel like it's going to be coming soon. So I'm eager to see what's going to happen next between those two.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've very much enjoyed the way they've been building up the conflict between the two of them. And how it's really, honestly, one of the things I liked that the show did is obviously we had season one and two direct conflict between the two, but then it still kind of smoldered under the surface. And so it just feels right. With this being the final season, it just feels like the right way for the show to end.
I agree with you totally. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Superman and Lois, Season 1, Episode 2, Heritage. The episode opens up with the Kent family packing up their stuff in Metropolis and moving to Smallville. Clark and Lois have a talk with the boys at the dinner table, and they don't want Jordan going to school because of his powers. We see that Captain Luther is having problems locating Kryptonite. His suit is getting low on power, and he wants to stop Kal-El from doing what he did to his world to this one. Lois takes Jonathan to school, and we see that he is getting bullied right away. And we also find out that the bullies are the reason he didn't get the football playbook. Clark takes Jordan to the Fortress of Solitude, and he learns a brief history of Krypton and meets the AI of Jor-El. Lana and Kyle invite Lois and the family to a barbecue. We see that Lois goes to the city council meeting about the Morgan Edge proposal, and Morgan promises 600 jobs to Smallville. Lois questions his number based on the history of failing those estimates in the past. We see Sam Lane is not happy about Clark moving the family to Smallville. And I noticed Clark did not tell him about Jordan's powers. Clark does get a lead on the mysterious Captain Luther being in Mongolia. And Captain Luther claims that Superman destroyed his whole entire planet. Superman is able to stop him, but has to let him go to stop the bomb on his ship to save lives. Superman discovers that Sam Lane has been stockpiling kryptonite. He says it's to protect him from the world because he married his daughter. Well, we see that Clark lets Jordan go to school. When Morgan Edge rewrites Lois's story, she quits the Daily Planet and goes to work for the Smallville Gazette. The episode ends with a flashback of Captain Luther fighting an evil Superman in a black costume from his Earth.
Much like with Batwoman, my girlfriend hadn't seen the first episode of this. And so I was trying to give her a quick rundown. And my brief summary was, it's about how bad of a parent Superman and Lois are. So this is the first episode she's seen, and she does not get that invested in these shows. So she just does. They're just not really her cup of tea, which is fine. But it was driving her nuts, Drew. And I can't emphasize enough that she doesn't really care that much about these shows, that Clark was insisting on only taking the one son up to the Fortress of Solitude. She's like, why? Why would you intentionally exclude one of the kids like this? This is really bothering me. It's like, yeah, well, like I said, the show is about how bad of a dad he is, so that makes sense.
I had a problem with that, too, so you could let her know that. I was wondering why he didn't take the other one up there also. It didn't make sense to me. But
it only makes sense if your goal as a show is for him to be a wildly incompetent parent. Which is apparently what the show's set out to do. That I've not seen any evidence to the contrary. I don't think that's what the show wanted to be about, Drew. I think it wanted it to be about you know, a feel-good family story. But thus far, they've done a phenomenal job making him possibly one of the worst dads that they've shown in their connected universe.
Yeah, I'm hoping they correct that soon.
I mean, he's basically begging for one of his sons to become a villain, right? Like, it's just like he's like, Dear Diary, today one of them didn't snap. We'll try again tomorrow.
The Fortress of Solitude looked like a bat version of the Ice Cave or something. You know what I mean?
It didn't look like anything to me. It looked like it was a random cave that he just happened to have a terminal in. I get it because it's the CW and your budget is limited and blah, 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 blah. But like, we couldn't have made more of an investment in the fortress. Really? It was just ice. It was just ice. There was nothing else there.
Yeah,
like it wasn't even a full-fledged. They literally just walked into a cave. So they're still standing in really cold weather when they're in the cave because it's just exposed to the outside. Literally anybody could wander into that, Drew. It's not a fortress. It's the Cave of Solitude.
One of the things I noticed was Clark was wearing a winter jacket. I was like, hey, Clark doesn't need to have a winter jacket.
Yeah, but the actor does.
Yeah. I like the second episode. I'm enjoying the show, even though we're seeing Clark make mistakes in his fatherhood. I'm still enjoying the show. One of the things I'm interested in is what's going on with Captain Luther.
To be clear, Drew, I am also enjoying it for the most part. I think I would not be by that bothered by Clark's parenting mistakes if I felt like the show was doing it purposefully. I feel like the show is like accidentally representing him doing really dumb things as a parent. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that could be because it might, some of the writers might not be parents. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you could be right. But I am very intrigued by the Captain Luther story because that implies a multiverse, which we know exists, but none of the characters, we knew that it still existed. And in fact, when we watched The Flash is still very much in that they're under the impression there's only one universe. So it's really interesting that Superman and Lois is doing something different from that.
Yeah, and I find it very interesting. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, they've taken some of the story from the comic book, the New 52 into Rebirth, where that Superman was from a different dimension. I was wondering if they're trying to incorporate some of that in there. I wasn't sure.
You could be right. It's possible.
So I'm curious about that. I don't think that our Clark is that evil Superman Clark, but
no.
But no. I'm pretty sure this is going to be fallout from Crisis stuff, and I think they're getting part of their story from the comics. So either way, it's interesting. All right, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Flash, Season 7, Episode 1, All's Wells That Ends Wells. I had to laugh at that title. When the episode opens up, Chester P. Runk has a fix on Eva McCullough's position. He wakes up Flash from stasis and Barry goes after Eva. He only has 1% left of his speed. Eva tells Flash that they are on the same side, and Barry answers, "If we're on the same side, give me back my wife." Eva's fractal photons move at the speed of light, and she's able to quickly take out the Flash. Eva goes to the warehouse hideout of Sam Scudder and Rosalind Dillon, a.k.a. Mirror Master in the Top. Eva kills Sam Scudder, claiming he wasn't human, but was one of her first mirror creations. We find out that Eva hits 9 more locations after her encounter with Flash. And Flash tries to catch her, but he misses her every time. Cecile tries to find out where Black Hole Tech is from Rosa, the Top. And Cecile learns that Rosa is working for Eva and that she has planted a bomb on a supersonic jet that is carrying the Black Hole technology. If the bomb explodes over the city, it will kill millions of people. Nashwell confronts the Council of Wells. He learns that there are multiverse particles in his body left over from the Crisis. These would be able to power the artificial speed force. Unfortunately, it would kill Nash. For Flash to run again, Nash Wells must die. Nash Wells does not want to die, so he comes up with another plan. They use Allegra's power to transfer the multiversal particles into the machine. It doesn't work, and Barry takes the full brunt of the force, transferring all the Wells into him. We see that Chester builds a machine so Allegra can transfer the particles into it, and Nash decides to sacrifice himself so Barry can get his speed back to stop the plane. When the plane lands, Argus is there to collect the Black Hole tech. We find out that Iris is still trapped in the mirror world, but is having a vision of eating dinner with Barry. Barry tells Iris that the Kansas State funnel cake was Clark's recommendation. An evil Iris shows up, and Iris tries to hide from her until she realizes Eva messing with her. And at the end of the episode, Eva learns that she is a duplicate, and the real Eva is dead.
So, Drew, before we get into kind of discussing the details of the episode itself, I want to get your opinion on this. This feels like this was... I almost question if this was filmed for the most part before the pandemic shut it down. Like, this feels like it was absolutely meant to be the next episode.
Now that you mention it, I can see that. Because this
feels
did not...
like the second to last episode of a season. This, like, you've got the big emotional sacrifice of a character. You've got with the renewed, and this is going to be the thing to push us over the top to defeat her next episode. Like, this feels like it, I think it was 2 episodes short, right? This feels like the first of those 2 episodes. And I'm strongly questioning whether we're going to get a Titans scenario.
I have to agree with you because when I watched I watched this episode twice. The first time I watched it, it did not feel like a season opener to me. I'm like
it's not.
Because they spent almost most of the episode they spent on building this artificial speed force, which honestly, I don't care about an artificial speed force. Give me back the regular speed force. But it looks like they're going to be sticking with this artificial speed force going forward. At least that's what it felt like to me. You're right, we had the sacrifice of Wells, and I was wondering why we were sacrificing Wells at the beginning of the season. Because it felt like...
Because this isn't the beginning of the season.
Yeah, you can definitely tell this is because of COVID.
It's just an odd choice because none of the other shows did this.
Right.
This one literally is just picking straight up where it left. And maybe they'll divert later. Because next episode is clearly, based on this one, the next episode was meant to be the season finale last year. So maybe they'll do something different and they'll keep going with Eva. But like, I also wouldn't be shocked if Eva's defeated next episode. And then it's about something else entirely after that.
Honestly, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
I would, honestly, because if you're going to have to push it into a new season, you might as well take advantage of it and do some more stuff with it. Extend the villain out, not for the whole season, by all means, don't do that. But like, at least just do it till the mid-season finale. Use that time. And instead, it just feels like they're what it feels like to me, Drew, is that they're basically burning off a couple episodes of this season, and the true season starts in episode 3. And we both did not like that Titans did that. Because if you're going to push it into a new season, just do then utilize the opportunities that it gives you. Otherwise, what are we doing?
Okay, I agree with the fact that we should probably have some more Eva for a few episodes. Maybe 5 episodes. I wouldn't want her the villain all the way to mid-season. Because then it would feel like she's hanging around too long. And I don't want to get blood work again. So, I guess it wasn't blood work. It was the villain before blood work, wasn't it?
Well, but I think you can go in a different direction. I think she would feel like she's sticking around too long if you basically just kept the same story but made it longer. I feel like you'd use this opportunity to, instead of having the moment where she would be defeated, and maybe they will do this. I don't know. Maybe they will do this. Go a different direction where you have that moment, but then something else happens and she sticks around, maybe in addition to someone else, but that she's still there. Like, if we're just going to do the finale in episode 2, I just don't understand why you wouldn't just release these two separately. Like, put these two episodes out, I don't know, a month ago, and be like, and now a special conclusion to last season, and air these two episodes.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Nevertheless, this episode felt lacking to me. I liked it. It just felt lacking. I definitely liked it better when I watched it the second time around than I did the first time around.
Well, I bet you'd like it even more if you watched the last couple episodes before this, because I legitimately question whether most of this was already filmed. I'm sure not all of it, and I'm sure there were some changes, but I truly, at minimum, it's got to be the same script, at minimum.
We didn't have Cisco in this. We didn't have Caitlin. They mentioned that Sue and Ralph were way off the grid or something like that. We'll probably never see them back on the grid.
Yeah.
They probably won't even be mentioned again after that mention.
Well, I think we're going to see them once, right? I think they said they had cast somebody like in they had found some solution to like giving you some sort of visual send off for the character.
Oh yeah, that's right. I remember. I think that was DC News back last at the beginning of summer or something. But yeah. Now that you mentioned, I remember that. One thing I thought I found weird was Barry's new way to put on his mask. I'm surprised they went digital with that.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems in line with, honestly, what we've seen with the Flash in the comics recently. Not maybe that exact thing, but I don't know. And it also just seems in line with what they're kind of doing with the... For whatever reason, it feels like they need... The shows feel this weird need to explain how the heroes are getting their costume on. And I don't know that anybody actually cares, but these shows are very insistent on explaining it to you.
Yeah, I don't really care.
I know. Well, nobody cares. Like, come on. I don't care. But I don't know. It's very, like I said, it's very in line with the show. The show seems very concerned with being like, well, just in case you were definitely wondering about this. But that's how it gets his hood on.
The show's bringing on Chester. Do we really need another guy in the chair? This show's got too many of them.
Well, I would say no, but I think he's meant to replace. It feels like they're phasing out some people. That was the thing. I think the thing that felt hollow to me, Drew, with this, like you said, it felt lacking. I think part of that is because they had this big emotional moment with Wells, and the team that Barry is mourning with is not the team that we're used to seeing him with. He's with Allegra and Chester, which they're fine. I don't dislike either character, but that's not the Flash team that we know. So that moment really felt weird, where it's just like, it was like they had the squad together, but it wasn't. It was the fake squad.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because that's how I felt too. And it did. It felt weird coming back to a new season with this other team trying to be the original Flash team. It just felt weird, and I have to agree with you on that. And my other question is, are we done with Wells, or are we getting another Wells back? It feels like we're going to be getting a new Wells for the season, but this felt like it was the end of Wells, so I wasn't sure.
I'm pretty sure he's coming back, but this was a phenomenal way to ensure that he never, ever comes back. That was the thing that was confusing to me. I was like, wow, they really went all in, like really emphasizing we are killing every single Wells all at once. And then they're going to turn around and be like, oh, but he'll come back. And it's like, well, then I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to, if theoretically, you were trying to figure out a way to kill a character off so thoroughly that actor could never come back. That would be the way to do it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Kill every single version all at the same time. It was weird. But like I said, I'm like almost positive he's not done on the show.
I did find it funny, Barry acting out all the Wellses. I did find that funny. The first time I watched it, I found it annoying. But the second time I watched it, I found it funny. So maybe I was just coming back at it a different perspective. So next episode, I guess it'll kind of point us in what direction the show is going to go. If we're going to get more Eva, or if they're just stopping that story and moving on to something else.
I'm very curious to see what the show is going to do. Everything we've seen to me suggests that next episode is going to be the season finale, and then episode 3 is going to be the true season premiere. And I hope that's not the case, because that's just disappointing to me, because you've got to be able to do something different than that.
Yeah, I don't want it feeling like the Titans, that's for sure. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
I got a shout out about the now concluded WandaVision show. Man, what a great show. I am excited to get more products like that from HBO Max for DC properties. Like, that was so good. And it was so refreshing seeing that quality of writing, the budget assigned to it. It made it a little tough sometimes to go back to a show like Batwoman. And it was just like, oh. It's so good. I am sure most people, almost anybody listening to this podcast, also watched that show. But if you haven't, oh my gosh, go check it out.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out about WandaVision series finale. I had a feeling we were going to have the same shout-out this week. Man, that season finale was friggin' awesome. I really enjoyed it, and we saw it set up some stuff for future Marvel stuff, too. It's great how they... Marvel always does a great job of connecting their stuff, and this series was awesome. It did well for a television series. I couldn't have seen it as a movie. I don't think it would have worked as a movie.
No, but you could see how it could have been a movie, right? Like if you just like trim the fat off. But I agree with you. It was such a good decision to make it a TV series because that extra time and allowed the story to breathe and really spend time in different moments is what made it so good.
I'm excited about the Falcon and Bucky story coming up. I can't remember what it's called, but I'm looking forward to that one coming up soon because I'm expecting same quality out of it. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Sensational Wonder Woman, Rorschach, Superman, The Green Lantern Season 2, The Joker, Batman Urban Legends, and of course, Black Lightning, Superman and Lois, and Flash. That's right, no Batwoman. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.